The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. Today we'll try and rattle through the Premier League games so far this week before focusing on the Football League. Fog hides us from the reality of Crystal Palace and Manchester United as they do virtually nothing. Ian Acho takes our criticism personally and heroics from 10-man Sheffield United. In the Championship, Norwich take a huge step towards promotion. How great is Mick McCarthy? Why are Sheffield Wednesday so bad? They were always in the first division in my sticker albums. We'll get the interesting stories from Leagues 1 and 2, find out who makes money from the iFollow, discuss Spice partners for football clubs and remind Barry about Eli Buckheel Sam. All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, welcome.
Hello, Max. How are you?
I'm really good, thanks. I very much enjoyed the fallout to Eli Buckheel Sam, and we'll get onto it later. Ben Fisher, welcome to the pod. Anecdotes ready. Nice to see you.
Hi, Max. You okay?
Yeah. What have you got for us? Don't just tease us. Tease us for what's coming up.
I don't know. I fear I'm empty-handed, Max.
Didn't stop you the last time.
I'm just about to say, if you have nothing compared to what you deliver, I'd love to hear one of your boring stories, Ben. If you could line that up for part three, that would be great. Flo Lloyd Hughes, hello.
Hey, Max.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Thanks. Alex says, is this the worst Premier League season you remember watching? I don't remember the last actually good game I watched. I looked back because obviously there's so much football on that it all sort of blends into one. But there have been some really good, you know, the Liverpool-Leeds game on the opening day, that 4-3, Leicester winning 5-2 at City, Chelsea coming back from 3 down at West Brom, Spurs getting 6 at Old Trafford, Aston Villa putting 7 past Liverpool, Liverpool putting 7 past Palace, Manchester United 6, Leeds 2, United getting 9 against Southampton. There have been some good games, Barry, haven't there?
Yeah, there have, and there have been some awful ones, I suppose, the same as any other season. I think it's just the relentlessness of the season that's getting to me personally, and I think a lot of others. And I don't want to be the guy who gets paid to watch football and complains about it, but I just gave up on Manchester United Crystal Palace last night at half-time. I just could not take anymore. I'd already watched Burnley-Leicester, which was pretty good, a lot better than I was expecting. But when you're watching two games a night or four games on a Saturday, it just, you know, it is grueling. Obviously, not all football games are going to be entertaining, and most people aren't watching all the games. But I kind of have to, and you know, there are worse ways of passing the time. But there were not worse ways of passing the time last night for the second half of Manchester United Crystal Palace, so don't come to me on that, because I have, you know, from what I can gather, the fog was so bad you couldn't actually see it anyway, which was a bit of a blessing. It's just a schedule that is not helping.
Yeah. Well, T2K47 says, do the panel agree that by blanketing Selhurst Park in thick fog so as to save us from having to watch that game, we have the definitive proof that he truly is a benevolent god? It wasn't a fantastic football match, but I like the way on the WhatsApp you did the first half and then Flo took up the reins for the second half. I mean, it was a bad game of football, and they happen. I think what's interesting, Flo, is the players are obviously tired because they're playing all the time and they're playing at weird hours, and it must be strange for them. But you kind of expect that if all the players are tired, it could end up being 5-5. You know, maybe it's just easier to tighten up at the back and do that with tired people.
Yeah, I think it was two teams coming together with different issues and different things that they were trying to achieve. I think looking at some of what, you know, Crystal Palace fans or people who watch Crystal Palace regularly took from the game, they were quite pleased with a solid Palace performance that kind of, I guess, summed up the progress in some ways under Hodgson in terms of so many players that he's worked with for a very long time, really experienced players showing why even in the latter stages of their career, they can still play at the highest level. So I think they had some positives to take. And then the other reflection was, well, this weakness of Manchester United to really create anything. Fred was kind of the topic of conversation last night, how much they paid for him. how little he really brings to the team. So I think it was kind of different issues on both sides that neither could solve. And I don't know how much the day did kind of like 15 minutes of analysis on that game, because I don't really know what they were talking about. They're kind of going around in circles. But I think it did highlight issues that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's had, you know, ever since the beginning, and they're not really going away.
Yeah, he's got a lot of criticism after this game. My favourite tweet from the game, Ed Ahrens was there for The Guardian, and he can hear the players, which is nice. "What do you want me to do?" asks Rashford. "Fucking get back on side," says Harry Maguire. Nick Ames was doing the live blog, some of the highlights. 75 minutes, not enough ambition in this game from anyone so far. It's become a bit of a stinker. 84 minutes, Palace can slow proceedings up, if that's humanly possible, by introducing Schlupp for Eze. It was an interesting question about time wasting. An idea on time wasting from That's How It Starts. Stop time wasting at throw-ins is easy, right? You get 6 seconds and then the throw-in goes to the other team. For goal kicks, if the keeper takes too long, then it's a corner. They'd soon get a shift on. The 88th minute yellow card is no deterrent. Ben, your thoughts?
I don't know about that, Max. I mean, I think that is a... Obviously, I understand where they're coming from, but I think, especially with referees at the moment and all these different rules, obviously VAR as well, I personally think there's just too much, I don't know, will or too much desire to mess around with things. Like, if we sort of rewind back to a few years ago, I'd be quite happy with that. So I would put that same suggestion in that same basket, and let's just sort of pine for what we had before, because I preferred that personally.
The funny thing about time wasting is, and I was watching Scunthorpe win 1-0 at Cambridge United on Tuesday night with their one kick that they had in our half, and they scored with 12 minutes from time. When the opposition is time wasting and you are losing, the rage it brings in you is just so intense. But when you're winning and you're time wasting, you don't even notice. I don't even notice it when we do it. It just shows I'm as biased as every other fan, I imagine. You said Barry, Burnley 1, Leicester 1 was a pretty decent game. Ian Acho scored a lovely goal. Either one or both of us were quite dismissive of Ian Acho on Monday. Liam says, "If you ever needed proof that Ian Acho was a subscriber to the pod, read your last comment about him. What an absolute beauty. Thank you, Max." Andrew says, "I think Ian Acho listened to yesterday's pod, specifically when Barry expressed how unconvinced he is by Ian Acho." So it's good to have a famous listener, I guess.
Well, I've been withering in my criticism of Ian Acho for quite a long time on the basis that he doesn't ever seem to take his opportunities when they arise. He certainly took one last night. Beautiful volley with the ball dropping over his shoulder. He's looking behind him as it drops out of the sky and blasted past Nick Pope, who made it easier for him by sort of coming off his line, dithering a bit and getting stranded in no man's land. But it was a wonderful goal. So fair play to him. But I just wish he could do it more often. It almost proves my point in a way, that he's shown me what he can do, but why doesn't he do it more often? I know his opportunities are limited and maybe he tries a bit too hard when he gets them, but that was an absolutely excellent goal. So fair play to him for that.
It leads us to the question that I asked you on Monday, Barry, which is, would you still pick Ian Marshall over Ian Acho?
Yes.
Okay. A question about Nick Pope's mistake, Flo. I wondered, because he was completely out of position, does a Pope mistake just not look as bad as a Pickford mistake? So it's like, if Pickford had done that, he'd have done it in a really sort of jittery way, and we'd have noticed it more.
Yeah, I think Pickford just has a bit more of a frantic energy about him than Pope does. Just even in his mannerisms, the way he communicates his energy is just a bit, yeah, frantic. And he also does things like that more often than Pope does. So I think that's why people just reflect on it as a one-off rather than a weekly occurrence.
There was a moment in this game, Ben, which made me make my first involuntary noise of the evening, which was, not that there were many, I'd like to point out, Kasper Schmeichel's save from Chris Wood's header was ridiculous, I thought.
Yeah, and Kasper Schmeichel is amazing, isn't he? I don't know. I think he's such a key element, and especially behind closed doors. You hear him at a game. He's the loudest sort of voice presence in the whole stadium. He's booming from sort of start to finish. And he's just such a key pillar in that team. And maybe sometimes with all the kind of attacking talent they have in Vardy, Maddison, all that kind of flair, maybe goes unnoticed. I don't think by Leicester fans, I think they realise what they've got. But obviously he's been on that journey with them. And I think that's a great story. And yeah, such an impressive goalkeeper. And for me, when we had to do our top 100 sort of annual feature we do on the website, I think I put him in the top 40. I can't remember where I put him, but I put him really high up, which some people might think was sort of pushing it. But I really like Kasper Schmeichel, and that save you mentioned, just kind of typical of him, really just does preposterous things sometimes.
The other time I made an involuntary noise was Ashley Westwood's volley that hit the post. It came out of absolutely nowhere. Fed Up Chiswick writes, has Jamie Vardy finally run out of steam? Half of his league goals have come from the spot this season. He's not looked lively for a few months now. Commentators seem a bit worried to criticise him, or maybe criticism just strays too far from the conventional script. He then tweeted later to say, I would like a bit of chat over my Vardy question, especially from Barry, or as my brother and I like to call him, the Bazinator. So,
there you go, Barry.
If the Bazinator could give his views on Jamie Vardy, it would be most welcomed by Fed Up Chiswick.
Well, the Bazinator is of the opinion that Fed Up Chiswick is being unduly harsh on Jamie Vardy, who had a hernia operation about 2 months ago, was rushed back from it, and is clearly carrying an injury because he spent a large part of his time on the pitch during Leicester's defeat at the hands of Arsenal, sort of feeling his groin. I think it would be unfair to criticise his lack of goals at the moment because he's injured.
And Barry, we should mention Burnley, who played really, you know, coming off that defeat to Spurs where they were hopeless, they played really well.
Yeah, they roared out of the traps and got an early goal thanks to a good goal from Matej Vidra, who pounced on a mistake from Hamza Chowdhury. But it was quite an odd game in that it was very much a lot of ebb and flow. So Burnley were dominant for 20 minutes, then Leicester were dominant for 20 minutes, then Burnley again, and then Leicester again. Either side could have won it. Both sides were very unlucky, and a draw was absolutely the fair result.
I enjoyed Hamza Chowdhury trying to blame someone else. For that under-hit pass. To Bramall Lane, Sheffield United 1, Villa 0. I really enjoyed this game, Flo. I actually sort of found Sheffield United's defending sort of quite moving in like a sort of, I don't know, some kind of 80s action movie type way, like sort of deep impact. You know, they'd saved the world. They'd had a harsh sending off, but they'd all stuck together and come through it.
Yeah, I think they showed signs of why last season they did so well, and what's got them to this point is because they are a team, they're a unit, they've got a manager who is well loved, a manager who is really good at what he does, but they've struggled this season. I think they needed a performance like that to kind of show themselves what they can do and know that, you know, there's some fight left in them and they're not just kind of wounded animals that are just being kicked down to relegation. So I think they definitely showed that, and they showed more fight than they'd shown in recent games. And Villa are a very good team. So to get that result with the sending off as well is huge. And sometimes you do just have to be a bit scrappy and kind of live life on the edge for a bit and get the result. So it was definitely a positive for them given the season they've had so far.
The red card, Ben, do you have any thoughts? Or do you want to put that in the, you know, in the bin and go back to however many years ago where things were better?
Yeah, in the recycling bin. No, I mean, I was just going to say, for Villa, it's going to be interesting now, isn't it? Because they're one of a clutch of teams that at different times have had their kind of moment in the sun or prolonged moment in the sun. You know, people talking them up to, you know, dizzy heights. And I just think, you know, what will will they look like at the end of the season? Where are they going to end up? I think it's interesting because, I mean, Leicester, again, they've had sort of moments as well. And you think, what are they going to do? And Villa, one of those teams. So, I mean, look at Southampton. Not so long ago, they were being talked as, you know, European hopefuls. And I mean, Sheffield United should play them this weekend, and that feels a really big game for Saints.
On the red card, Flo, I thought it was harsh. One of the angles, they sort of cut out the covering player from the still image, like to show the ref. One screen was like, there's nobody else there. Sort of at an angle where the goal was right there, like, this is how clean through he was. And then in real time, I don't know, I just thought it was really harsh.
Yeah, I think it was harsh, and given how many situations like that in the Football League happen and red cards are not given, it seemed extremely harsh to start getting out the, you know, the rulers to work out if he was really the last man. So yeah, I think that was harsh, and I mean, I don't know if they'll, you know, try and appeal it or what, because of VAR. I think it's even harder when, you know, they've already had a look at it, but it does seem very harsh.
I think there was a absolute blatant penalty for Villa in the first half, where some Sheffield United player just barged someone out of the way and just nobody mentioned it. Phil Jagielka, by the way, the second oldest player to be sent off in Premier League history, after Stuart Pearce, who was sent off in March 2001 for West Ham against Everton when he was 38 years and 341 days old. Manchester City 4, Wolves 1. Wolves tempting us into thinking that maybe the winning run would end. But no, 21 wins on the trot now for City, 28 games unbeaten, equaling their club record from 2017. 15 points clear now. Richard Jolly's stat, Man City have won as many games in their last 21 matches as Steve Keane did in 21 months as the Blackburn Rovers manager. I was chatting to someone, a City fan, who was explaining, and with some justification, that actually, you know, this run, although it seems easy to say, I can't think of anything good to say, we should really be thinking how impressive this run is, Flo, considering COVID, considering the bad start to their season, considering City have changed their style of play. You know, there are lots of things to focus on that we should still be praising them for.
Yeah, massively. I think, I can't remember if I did a pod and we talked about this at the start of the season, but certainly the narrative at the start of the season and the articles that were being written about their sluggish start and whether, you know, Pep was going to be leaving and announcing he was going to be leaving soon, and a lot of doubt that surrounded their season, and how he has just flipped that on its head completely and is now heading for, you know, a record-breaking season really with the run that they're going on, is massively impressive. And I think it just highlights how good he is as a coach. Obviously, they have phenomenal resources at their disposal, and that helps.
No, you're not allowed to mention that, Flo. It doesn't count.
Especially with COVID, you know, not many Premier League teams have that opportunity. And we've also obviously talked about the situation that Liverpool have sort of got themselves in some ways. But I also think, you know, there's players like John Stones who have completely rejuvenated themselves over the last couple of months and deserve a lot of credit as well for stepping up at the right time, despite a lot of questions about if they were good enough to play for a club like City and inconsistencies around their game. I think they've just come together as a unit. They've taken on board what Guardiola wanted to do and the changes he'd made, and they are a phenomenal team.
Having said that, or having you having said that, not me, Manchester City should win every game. I mean, they are much better than everyone else. They have more resources than everyone else. They have a better squad than everyone else. So they should win every game. Manchester City losing should be big news. But it is impressive insofar as they never seem to have an off day, which any team can have, no matter how good or wealthy they are. But I think a lot of that might be down to the depth of their squad, because players aren't guaranteed a spot in the team. So when they do get a spot, they have to take their chance. What I just mesmerised me the other night was the, like, this staccato nature of their passing, which it's almost like a drum roll. You know, just the way they ping the ball around so quickly and so accurately and on the floor. And then when they're putting balls into the box, they just seem, their crossing seems to come at a different trajectory to everyone else's and from different angles that other people haven't quite figured out yet. And that for me, they seem to be revolutionising the game in that regard, sending in these flat crosses from weird angles that other players wouldn't even consider crossing from.
I think it is also really hard to get rotation right. And I think the other night they made six changes. And Guardiola, ever since he's been at City, rotation's been a big part of his ethos. But it is hard to make that work when you're doing that many changes. And obviously they play in every single competition and get deep into most competitions. So they, it's essential that they do that. But I do think it shows how good they are and shows how well they understand what he wants from them, that they can make six changes and pull off a performance against, like they did against Wolves, who are, you know, obviously having a disappointing season in some ways, but are a good side. So I think that is one of the most impressive things, is that constant rotation, and, you know, it never seems to fail at the moment.
Well done to Connor Cody. He scored his first ever Premier League goal on his 103rd appearance, his first shot on target in his Premier League career, his third shot overall in the Premier League. The dying Jedi, Nuno Espirito Santo, said, "It's difficult to execute your game plan against Manchester City." Correct. Everton 1, Southampton 0. Everton are seventh, of course they are, but at least one game in hand on all the sides above them. They've got their highest points tally after 25 games in a Premier League season since 2013-14, in which they finished fifth. I was very sad to see they didn't finish seventh in that one. Ancelotti says, "We have the opportunity to be in the top four for 2 or 3 days. We would like to touch the position, even if it is just for a few days. Win tonight at the Hawthorns and they will do it." If you remember this far back, they scored from their first meaningful attacks. Lovely ball from Sigurdsson to Richarlison, who rounded the keeper. Barry, you said you had this game covered for us.
Yeah, it wasn't a good game. Each team had one shot on target. Southampton lost again. They're on the slide big time. Oriol Romeo was a big loss for them. Stuart Armstrong moved into centre midfield, and he was too far forward all the time. He didn't play the defensive role he was probably asked to play, and his creativity was missed on the wing. But Southampton can take consolation from the fact that even though they lost, they had more shots, more corners, more passes, more touches, and conceded fewer fouls, but in terms of stats, but there was very little in it.
Everton play West Brom tonight, Thursday, and we'll have another pod tomorrow. We'll deal with that game, Fulham, Spurs and Liverpool, Chelsea. And that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll start at the top of the Championship with Norwich. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weeklies. The Championship, Norwich top, 10 points clear of Brentford. Watford, Swansea, Reading, Bournemouth make up the playoff spots. Barnsley, Cardiff, Middlesbrough in with a shout. Wickham, Sheffield, Wednesday, Rotherham currently in the bottom three. Just for any of our listeners who don't follow the Championship or the Football League and wanted a little update, a snappy one, there it is. William says, Ben, if Norwich get promoted and blow it next season, can they be banned from promotion for a season? That win against Brentford's a huge result, isn't it?
Yeah, a massive win. And it's a weird one because it was a tea time kickoff that kind of just got hidden away in the tea time slot. But actually, the game was massive, and Norwich winning it, lots and lots of breathing space at the top. Feels like to me that that's the one that kind of clinches it for them. I don't think anyone will catch them now. And I think the interesting part is second place now, because Brentford are in there, but Swansea have a couple of games in hand. And Watford keep picking up results as well, even though all the chaos that is always going on there, they're not sort of going anywhere, or won't sort of go without a fight. So it'll be interesting what happens. But yeah, massive result for Norwich. And really, they should have won by a more comfortable margin.
Is the simple thing with Norwich that they just kept hold of most of their players? Is it that simple?
Yeah, and they've... I mean, Stuart Webber there, the sporting director, spoke really candidly and really well on it, in the sense that they're not going to be bullied in terms of just letting players go on the cheap. I mean, Godfrey, they got a really... commanded a big fee for somebody, again, who's not played many games. Buendia and Max Aarons will only leave kind of on their terms, as it were. And I think, you know, if they'd not gone up, then they would definitely be off. It'd still be interesting, because I think in the summer those guys will still have admirers higher up the food chain. Buendia's, you know, arguably sort of standout player in that division this season. I think he's made it 10 goals and now 10 assists. You know, hell of a contribution from midfield, and he does all kind of sides of the game. And I don't know, I think with Norwich, the problem they've got is the team that will go up, inevitably go up, would kind of still get walloped probably next season. So they need to shift something, but I don't really know where they go, because the model is so, you know, it's what they do, it's what they want to do.
I only watched highlights of this game, but it struck me that the Norwich I was watching beat Brentford were incredibly similar to the Norwich that got relegated last season, in terms of personnel and in terms of not being brilliant at the back and missing a lot of chances. So I asked occasional supply producer Mel, a Norwich fan, if the same thing would happen this Norwich that happened the last Norwich to get promoted. But she reckons they're a much more well-rounded team now. They're not as free-scoring, but they're much more solid at the back. Their game management is much better. Defence much tighter. Ben Gibson has been excellent signing in the heart of defence. Oliver Skip on loan from Spurs has been brilliant in midfield. And Kenny McLean, who didn't have a good season in the Premier League, is a player reborn, but then he may just be a good championship player. So it will be interesting to see what happens. They will get promoted.
Yeah, Skip has been brilliant on loan from Spurs. Just to add to that, Barry, I think he's been superb. And for somebody so young, who again had not played too many games of senior football, he looks like a kind of veteran number six in there, sort of extinguishing little fires in, yeah, really classy player. And Gibson as well. Then it's interesting, isn't it? Because Ben Gibson obviously got the move to Burnley, didn't quite make the step up. So I think that's the problem they've got. They've got a lot of very good championship players. Can they make the transition without, you know, kind of going down again? I don't know. It's going to be hard.
Out of those playoff, you know, from Brentford down, Flo, who looks the most promising to you, do you think?
I think Brentford will go up. I think they're going to make it hard work. I think they managed to put a bad run to an end recently, but hopefully this, for them, hopefully this defeat last night won't be the start of another bad run. But I think their issue is they're a very tight squad. They've had a lot of injury problems in the last few weeks. They've got a tremendous goal scorer in Ivan Toney. He's probably going to get to 30 goals fairly easily this season. But they rely quite a lot on a couple of players. And Rico Henry's out at the moment, injured. Christian Norgaard, who was huge for them last season, is still working his way back. So they rely so much on these couple of players. And I think when those players aren't at their best, it really impacts them quite heavily. So I think those are the issues that they face. They just work so hard. They are lagging now with the demands of the season. But I think they still have enough to get that second automatic spot. But I think they're going to make hard work of it. And I think it's going to be extremely nerve-wracking for their fans, who've obviously been through a lot already over the last couple of seasons with the playoffs and everything. So last season was, you know, a pretty cruel blow. So I think they'll get the second automatic spot. And I think as we see it now, I think that will be the playoff spots. I think Barnsley have been hugely impressive. They are, you know, such a unique team. They work so hard. Like, they, I think, are one of the best pressing sides in England and maybe Europe. I just have never seen a team work as hard as them. Their fitness levels, their athleticism is mad. And I think they are going to push the rest of the playoffs teams really far. And I think if any team is going to drop out, it's going to be Reading, because I think they are pretty inconsistent across the whole season. But I think with Bournemouth's squad, if they can sort out the manager situation, I don't think Jonathan Woodgate is good enough to be leading them. I think Bournemouth will get the playoff spot. I think Swansea will get a playoff spot. I think Watford will get a playoff spot. And then it'll be between Barnsley, Reading or Cardiff, I think. I don't think Borough will make it, but I would love to see Barnsley get in the playoffs, because they've had such a good season and they're a really impressive side. And I think that would just show that the growth they've made over the last couple of years.
Ben, you were at Ashton Gate for Bristol City 1, Bournemouth 2. Quite the change in the Bristol news patch, with Nigel Pearson coming in at City and Joey Barton coming in at Rovers. You're at the game. Where did you park?
Just a stone's throw, Max. Just a stone's throw.
Woodgate in until the end of the season. You heard Flo say she doesn't think he's the right person. Mm. I spoke to a Bournemouth podcaster on the radio a couple of weeks ago who felt pretty uninspired by it as well. What do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting. Had a good chat with Woodgate after the game last night, and he's quite straight talking, honest, as you'd expect. I think he's obviously determined and has a lot of belief that he can take the chance. The only thing is, I think if you know, it's quite simple. It's probably if he doesn't get them up, it's probably game over for him. That's just the reality of where Bournemouth are at and the expectation on them, and obviously having kept a lot of the squad that came down. It is interesting because they've got a lot of coaches there, and you can make an argument that maybe there's too many cooks. They've got six kind of coaches, including Woodgate. Joe Jordan's joined the backroom team now. Gary O'Neill's gone in there as well from one of the 23s. So there's a lot of voices, and Joe Jordan really is the only one of any kind of experience, I suppose you could argue. I do worry about them, although they've had two very good results. The poor performances, they weren't brilliant last night against Bristol City, but they're still in there. And they do have players that can change games. You know, Dan Juma, and they've got a few match winners like that. So they've got a chance, but for them, you know, reaching the playoffs isn't good enough. They've got to get promoted.
How's Jack Wilshere doing?
Yeah, he's good. He's obviously suspended on the back of the weekend with the brawl that happened against Watford. But they like him, and I think he likes it. It's quite a good fit there. Can he make a meaningful contribution this season? I don't know. It's a bit like David Brooks. He struggled for form, now injured again. It's a shame because, you know, these guys are really talented players, but they're not quite where they would like to be at the moment. And just on Barnsley as well, to pick up, it's amazing what they do with Ishmael. They did it again last night where they replenished the front three. It's like they've come into a sort of pit lane for a stop in the, you know, wheels change, tyre change, because he just sort of brings them off after an hour, puts on a new front three and says, you three go and, you know, run your socks off. And I think they scored moments after they'd made that triple sub last night. So, yeah, high press, high energy, and it's getting results. And, yeah, as Flo said, they like to recruit from lower leagues. Callum Britton's been a really good pickup from MK Dons. Callum Stiles, who they took out of Bury, looks hell of a prospect, age 20, and he's one of the players that I would think, along with maybe Michael Olise at Reading, who could make that step up to the Premier League, as we've seen with Eze, Watkins and those kind of guys.
I was just going to add on Bournemouth, I do think it was the wrong decision to let Tindall go. And I think they would have seen themselves ideally being in the position that Norwich are in, because similarly, they kept hold of some key players that they had in the Premier League, and they would have hoped to be doing what Norwich were doing right now. And although Tindall hadn't had the dream situation this season, I think sticking with that blueprint is a safer approach than what I foresee Bournemouth going on now, the journey that they're going to go on now, which is flipping between various different managers. I think not hiring Thierry Henry was a great shout, because I think they've dodged a bullet there, because I don't think he would have been the right fit for that, having really not had enough good managerial experience and had any good managerial experience at that either. But I think when you're a club like that, a small club with a blueprint, with a philosophy, with a style, hiring internally makes sense. But now it looks like they're going to be going on a journey where they're going to be flipping between different coaches, going to start going into the territory where you're just hiring people because they're big names, which they've already sort of gone on that as ready with the Henry links and with Woodgate, who didn't have a great time at Middlesbrough, really. By the end, it was really turgid and really bad to watch. And I worry that they're now going to get stuck in the Championship for a fairly long time if they get on this cycle of hiring names. And as soon as they sack Tindall, it's like that cycle begins when you do that, because they've now almost lost that internal solidity which they had with Howe and Tindall.
Cardiff and Mick McCarthy, Ben, is quite an extraordinary story, isn't it? They were 15th, had lost six in a row. He's gone 10 games unbeaten, 1-7, drawn 3. If you lose, it's all doom and gloom and sack the manager, he said. Now we're flying, we're in the playoffs, we're getting promoted. You won't get me carried away with it. Everyone gives you a pat on the back, but suddenly there's a knife in their hand, he says. But it's been an extraordinary turnaround.
Yeah, unbelievable transformation. Scoring goals, not conceding goals. They look like they're going to score almost every time they go forward. They don't have loads of the ball, but like Mick says, they're not really too fussed about that as long as they're picking up the results. They've gone to three at the back, look very solid. They've got Sean Morrison, who is a very good defender at Championship level. Curtis Nelson, Aidan Flint in from the cold. Three sort of 6 foot four, 6 foot five defenders. And I spoke to Will Volks for a piece on Cardiff. You've said, you know, the manager just wants them to sort of head it and kick it away. He's happy with that. And I think that is kind of what they do. Will Volks himself actually has been a really key player in this turnaround. He's got a hell of a long throw. that's played a part. Kiefer Moore scoring lots of goals, Wales teammate. And McCarthy actually, on Friday at Huddersfield, I think it's his 1,000th game, depending on who you believe, because they had four Anglo-Italian Cup games for Millwall that he took charge of many moons ago. So I think it was a surprise to him. But yeah, so he'll mark 1,000 on Friday. So hell of an achievement. You know, he knows the league inside out, and I just think it's, you know, it's just brilliant management. It's such a triumph for these guys who everyone says, you know, he's passed it and all these, you know, one-dimensional dinosaurs, all this rubbish. Absolutely brilliant. And it's just tremendous what he's getting out of this squad. And I mean, when you speak to him, when you speak to people close to it, they kind of say he simplified things. But I think it is a bit grander than that. He made a tactical tweak in his first game to get a point at Barnsley, 2-0 down, made that switch to three at the back with the wing-backs, and yeah, really paying off the work he's doing.
There's a really great piece on Wales Online, which is called The 40 Days of Mick McCarthy, where they kind of talk about what he's done in the last couple of kind of weeks and a month. And it's just, yeah, it's just a, I think the confidence in himself is what they talk about, because he knows the perceptions of him as a person, as a manager, and they talk about how he doesn't really care about that now, because he's got to a place in his career where it doesn't really matter. And I think that confidence is showing now with what he wants to do. And yeah, I just thought that piece was really good, so definitely go and check out, because it reflects on kind of all the stuff Ben was mentioning about having 26% possession and winning 4-0, which is pretty ridiculous.
Johnny says, what's Darren Moore doing? Doncaster invested in his team, invested in him, and doing well in League One. Out of nowhere, he leaves to a club struggling in the Championship with a revolving door for managers. He's the new Sheffield Wednesday manager. Didn't get off to a great start. They lost 2-1 at home to relegation rivals Rotherham, who were down to 10 men and scored a 97th-minute winner. Barry, what's he doing?
Well, I just presume he's been offered more money and the opportunity to move to a very, very big club, albeit one that's not just a sleeping giant, but one that's tossing and turning in the doldrums giant. I wouldn't see it as an act of treachery or anything. He's one of very few black managers in the league, so when a big opportunity like that comes along, I suppose you can't blame him for taking it.
I have to say, it just seems like a huge own goal from the outside looking in. He was doing quite an impressive job at Doncaster, had been backed. They had quite a lot of loanees in with Andy Butler, who's now taken charge, which is a great story in itself. He was the Donny Bells, the women's team manager, and he's also a qualified locksmith. And he was applying to be a police officer until Doncaster kind of gave him a chance again last summer. He was quite far down the road, you know, he was applying for his bleep test and all this sort of stuff. Yeah, so he's taken charge now, but it just feels an own goal on Darren Moore's part to me. Sheffield Wednesday just mired in crisis. An example, I know somebody that they wanted to speak to around the time they appointed Tony Pulis. They didn't get the man they wanted, and then they proceeded to say, okay, yeah, fine, but do you know any strikers or left backs, you know, that, you know, we might be able to. And that's kind of indicative of the mess that's going on there. People working for Chancery. Oh, it's really sad state of affairs, but it doesn't look good. And you've gone from Darren Moore, who had a very good chance of getting Doncaster up, would have been a great story. It's hard to see him not taking Sheffield Wednesday down, to be brutally honest.
I think what's really worrying as well is that it took them so long to appoint him. So he wasn't even the first choice, and yet he's gone in and risked quite a lot at a big name club when he was, like Ben said, on the journey to success in League One. And I think that would have been a better opportunity to stay there. Now he is part of this mess and he wasn't even their first choice. So yeah, it's just a bad decision.
Jack says, Max, you very nobly refused the money of big gambling, but what will you do when big turmeric comes knocking? Will you be holding up the same values? I guess only time will tell. Yes, Swansea City yesterday announced a partnership with the turmeric company for the remainder of the 2021 season as the club's official turmeric supplier. I don't know how...
You know how Robson Carnu has his own company that does that?
This is so. How Robson Carnu's company.
Oh, it is how Robson Carnu's company. Well, there you go.
Absolutely.
Welsh links.
I don't know how many other suppliers were in contention, but well done to them. Right, that'll do for part two. Part three, we'll do Leagues 1, 2 and any other business. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. So in League One, Peterborough disappointingly lead the way. Hull second. Lincoln, Portsmouth, Sunderland, Donny in the playoffs. Wigan, Rochdale, Northampton, AFC, Wimbledon in the relegation zone. Ben, what are the big stories coming out of League One?
For me, it's Burton Albion, who are on quite the run under Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, sort of Mark II there at the club. His right-hand man is Dino Mamria, who used to be in charge at Stevenage. I don't know if you remember. Gave me a great quote a few years ago. He called his one of his goats when he was growing up in Tunisia Gary, after Gary Lineker. So that's always stuck with me. But you wouldn't want to mess with Dino Mamria. He's a big guy, and together with Hasselbank, they're doing a really good job. In all seriousness, you know, I think they've won something like four of the last five. Picked up another good result in midweek. Only 4 points separate the bottom seven, but Burton have got momentum. So, you know, great club who've always kind of punched above their weight, even obviously on the journey to the Championship. And they look up for the fight in terms of, it looks like they've got a decent chance of staying up. Interestingly, Kane Hemmings, the striker I spoke to recently, he spoke really candidly about being scared before playing football matches. He's written almost 900 words in which he detailed what it was like for him and what he kind of struggled with anxiety basically over his career, from being released at Rangers to going part-time at Cowdenbeath. Now he's at Burton, his hometown club, and how coming home has actually helped him in his anxiety and his depression and struggle. So do sort of check that out if you get a chance. But yeah, he's part of that. He's scored goals in this run. And yeah, Burton, really good turnaround there.
Should mention Ipswich, who Paul Lambert finally departed. Mick McCarthy's the only one out of Ipswich's last five permanent managers not to have been called Paul. Paul Jewell, Paul Hurst, Paul Lambert, and now Paul Cook. They've had more managers named Paul than any other side in Football League history. But I think Ipswich fans quite pleased that they've replaced a Lambert with a Cook in the Paul department. Barry?
Well, Ipswich fans were quite pleased when they replaced Mick McCarthy, and look how that worked out for them. So I have very little sympathy for Ipswich fans.
I mean, we talked about the Wednesday mess, and Ipswich aren't at that point yet, but this is a fantastic appointment, and Cook was on the top of lots of people's lists and is always one of the front runners with the bookies for any single vacancy that comes up. But there's now kind of talk of this takeover, and Marcus Evans released a statement yesterday, and he does this quite often, basically saying that there's no truth in it, and he did receive an offer, but not from the group that are rumoured to be in the papers having interest. So I think Paul Cook could do really well there, and it's a massive opportunity, and he's a fantastic manager who's won promotion, I think, at least three times in the Football League. But I think the issue is they've got to sort out stuff behind the scenes, because that is just going to follow them around like a cloud of bad vibes, unless, you know, whatever happens is going to happen, because it's just, there's always something around Evans and his ownership, which is just, I think that's like, the fans will never be happy, I guess, if they can't sort out that side of things, because the manager is just only going to become a bit of a punching bag in that sense. Ben, I don't know if you agree or...
Yeah, obviously, yeah, there's a lot of apathy, really, probably, towards Marcus Evans, the regime, if you like. It is interesting, because obviously Lambert had just picked up a couple of decent results and they looked like they were going in the right direction. Paul Cook comes in, as you say, with a brilliant reputation. Worked wonders at Wigan in sort of dreadful circumstances. But it is a bit strange, because this is a guy who has had Championship interviews and ultimately was after a decent Championship job. So to go into League One, I get it. You know, it's a massive club, potential with the possible takeover and everything else. But yeah, Ipswich are in an interesting position. I suppose it goes one or two ways from here.
League Two, Cheltenham top, Cambridge second, Forest Green Rovers third, Tranmere, Morecambe, Bolton, Salford all in the playoffs, plus possibly five or six other sides in with a shout. Grimsby, Barrow and Southend seem to be the three fighting it out to stay in the Football League. I've watched every Cambridge game on iFollow. We're actually quite good. We pass it out from the back. We're better when Wes Houlihan is there to help us doing it. And he plays every other game. So we win every other game at the moment. Ben, you wanted to point out Bolton and Bradford, who are on brilliant runs.
Yeah, they meet this weekend as well at Valley Parade in what normal times would have been a brilliant occasion, great atmosphere. Obviously, sadly, no supporters there. But yeah, Bradford, I think, one of the interesting stories, certainly at the moment. You've got the youngest manager ultimately. You've got joint managers there in Connor Sellers and Mark Trueman. I think Connor's 29, Mark 33, 34. And then they're led by Ryan Sparks, who's the youngest chief executive in the Football League, who I believe is 29, 30 as well. So a bit of a youthful revolution going on at Bradford. But they've won something like 10 games out of the last 14 or 10 out of 13. You know, hell of a turnaround. They were down there with Bolton, who were kind of really struggling at the start of the season. But again, both teams have had a really good upturn, and Bolton going well under Ian Everett. Obviously, big expectations there for them, the club dropping into League Two. But they meet this weekend in both going really well. So I think it'd be interesting. And Bolton now do look like they've got that bit of momentum. We knew they had a good squad, Owen Doyle and people like that, who sort of been there and done it. So you'd fancy them now to maybe... They could even push into the top three. It's not out of the question.
Sean says, will the drainage issues in the Bunny Bell Bar bogs at Prenton Park be sorted out in time for fans' anticipated return in August? I don't know if we... I enjoyed the question. I wanted to read it out. I suspect we don't know the answer. We were asked a question about who makes money from the iFollow, and I actually found it quite interesting, Flo, because I didn't know the answer. I just presumed whichever club you signed it from got all the money, but it doesn't quite work out like that.
Yeah, it's a bit more not complicated, but I think they do it to give some love to bigger away teams, basically. And this season, because of the situation with the pandemic, the EFL is basically covering the streaming costs, whereas normally what would happen, Ben, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the EFL would essentially sell the production to the club, even if they're not on the iFollow scheme. Majority of clubs are on the iFollow scheme. Some do their own thing, like QPR do their own thing, Charlton do their own thing, some clubs do their own thing. But essentially, the EFL does the basic single camera production, and then the club buys it, and then they sell it. And before, it would have been only to international customers, most of the time, or all the time. And now, obviously, because of COVID, everyone's on the streaming package. So this season, the EFL is covering the costs in order to fill the gap that would normally be for fans. Big clubs, Norwich, I think they have 20,000 season ticket holders. They get a lot of revenue from it. They're one of the most streamed teams in the Championship. Other clubs down the bottom, League Two, only getting 500. So it just depends on the club. And I think what they've done to try and boost the revenues of the bigger clubs, the ones that are down there in League One and Two, Bolton, Sunderland, Ipswich, is that if you sell 500 as an away team, or the away team buys 500, they get 500 of the money from it. So it's 10 quid and then minus VAT. So it's about £8.60 or something like that. Is that a good summary, Ben, or have I missed some essential calculations?
No, I mean, it is one of those kind of complicated things, I suppose, in itself. But, I mean, I've got some figures here that I dug up just this morning from October, and there is a kind of blur between what is money actually coming in, fresh money, if you like, because season ticket holders, it varies between clubs. So some people are getting that as part of the package. Others have got their money back because they're not being able to go to the games, and they might be paying on top of that now. So it's a bit unclear as to how much is actually going into the coffers. But the figures I had here from October was that it was about 500,000 paid account views, and then about 350,000 on top of that was season ticket holders. So again, without trying to complicate things, it's unclear exactly how much of that is new money, as it were, and therefore money that's benefiting clubs at a time when there's no income. I know from speaking to clubs and chairmen and different people that they're very grateful to have something, but it's nowhere near, not even starting to make up for the kind of losses they're making on a daily, weekly basis.
Sure. It's worth pointing out to, our overseas listeners that perhaps don't look down below the Premier League, that it is an opportunity for fans who can't go to the stadiums in the Football League to pay 10 quid to watch their team online. For fans like me, who don't go to Cambridge United regularly, I think I found it brilliant, and I hope it remains when fans are back in stadiums. But that'll be an interesting decision to see if they keep it or if they don't. Will it stop people going to away games, etc.? It's a complicated debate.
Just an example, Max, maybe might be useful, is that from those figures in October, I think the highest seen game was Watford v Luton. It's about 12,500. So I suppose that indicates probably what, half full Vicarage Road maybe. in terms of the eyes on that game. So, yeah, again, something, but nowhere near enough at the moment.
Right, on tomorrow's pod, we'll pay tribute to Ian St. John, brilliant footballer, wonderful broadcaster. We'll discuss England and Ireland 2030, which bringing football home. What a great tagline. As well as the Premier League games on Thursday night. Lots of reaction, Barry, to your Buck Heel suggestion as the eponymous term for a goal scored by Eli Sam. There were almost GIFs made. The Rewind podcast made a picture with a seatbelt saying words to live by. Eli Sam up. It could save your life. I did tweet Notts County, Barry, to see if Eli Sam would change his name to Mr. Buckle just to help you. As yet, no response from Notts County.
I'm blaming Notts County rather than myself. I can't be expected to know who plays for Notts County.
So if they'd written, boom, what a goal, you'd have presumed he was called Mr. Boom.
Yes, I would.
Fair enough. Anyway, if your job is to make people happy, first of all, I'd like to say thank you to Amit, who sent me a lovely long email to confirm that Mogwai are nice people. And if your job is to make people happy, Patty has been in touch, Barry, saying, do a single gal a favour and ask Barry Glendenning to say uppity puppy again.
I saw this tweet. I can't remember saying uppity puppy before, but I've now said it again anyway, so there you go.
Is that the equivalent of like ASMR, whatever it is, for that woman there?
Is equivalent of what? Is that
ASMR is sort of like audio sound that is really pleasurable. And woman said, she's a single gal. I was wondering if Barry saying uppity puppy is the equivalent of ASMR for this woman.
If I say uppity puppy, and she's really getting value for money now, because that's about the fifth time I've said uppity puppy. If I said uppity puppy in my flat Midlands of Ireland accent, it would actually sound like uppity puppy. In Offaly, we don't say automatic, we say automatic. I worked on my diction.
You're like Dermot Gallagher. You know, you've been giving us a false accent all the time. Who's the real Barry Glendenning? That's the question. Nobody knows. Just say uppity puppy. That's all she wants.
I've said uppity puppy. I think that's now seven times. She's not paying for this service. What I want to do, or what I need to do, is sign up for one of those celebrity messaging services.
Yes.
Cameo.
And then she can pay me £25 and I'll say anything she wants.
I was going to ask you, Max, you look like the type that would be cashing in on Cameo.
How dare you? Do you know, someone like got in touch who's sort of working for them to say, look, it's really good, do you want to join? I was like, no, I don't.
What I would love to happen is for you to do that and then Paddy Power or the bloke who owns Betfred or Bet365 to offer the money, which you then wouldn't be able to take.
Well, listen, that'll do for today. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Flo.
Thanks, Max.
Thanks, Barry.
Uppity puppy.
Thank you, Ben.
Pleasure.
We'll be back. God, you said pleasure as if it was the worst hour you've ever had in your entire life. Were you just sad that you just hadn't delivered us an anecdote, Ben?
A little bit, if I'm honest.
You were just debriefing yourself, going, "Oh, I've really missed out. I've missed an opportunity here to deliver some news about, I don't know, your recycling bin or
gilt-edged chance,
some stationery you bought." Hey, listen, you'll have a
come on, Ben. You've got to have something in your locker. On your way home from the match last night, did you at any point think, "Oh no, I left my laptop at the ground"? And then go, actually, no, I didn't. I remember putting it in the boot. You got to have some gold there, anecdotal gold.
It was a seamless exit. I mean, the only thing that you trigger, Barry, was a bad memory a few years ago.
Here we go.
I thought I'd left my laptop on the top of my car leaving St. Mary's. And then I got home and I was going on holiday the next morning. And I was like, oh, where's my laptop? Looking in the car, realised I didn't have it. So then I got somebody who no longer works at Southampton anymore. I don't think this was the final straw. And I got them to drive around the car park with their main beam on, trying to find my laptop. And then, luckily, it's got a good ending. You'll like this one. It was inside all along. The security guy found it or something. So I wasted someone's time, quite a lot of time. So they spent...
Well, you've wasted some more people's time there. And that is that's a wonderful way to end. Thank you for your time, Ben. You can go now.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be back tomorrow.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.